You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 172 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to be talking Aquaman number 53, Batman number 81, Flash Forward number 2, Justice League number 34, Jimmy Olsen number 4, Batwoman season 1 episode 3, Down, 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 Supergirl season 5 episode 3, Blurred Lines, Black Lightning season 3 episode 3, The Book of Occupation chapter 3, Agent Odell's Pipe Dream. Flash, Season 6, Episode 3, Dead Man Running. Arrow, Season 8, Episode 2, Welcome to Hong Kong. And Titans, Season 2, Episode 7, Bruce Wayne. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. Man, that list keeps getting longer and longer. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. Wonder Woman 1984 director confirms Pedro Pascal as villain Maxwell Lord. So that's pretty cool.
I'm pretty excited about that. Obviously, he's a more modern villain, relatively speaking, for Wonder Woman. That's cool. I mean, I think there was a lot of speculation that he was going to play a villain when they cast him, and they weren't initially saying who he was. But yeah, that's exciting. I'm really curious to see what they do with that. And then that also makes me think that Cheetah might not be the full villain. You know, I mean, I feel like it's going to be Max, don't you?
Yeah, I think that too. And that Cheetah will just be either doing his bidding or helping him out, or maybe she might even just be a side villain. You know what I mean?
I think there are two things. I think either they want to do a redemptive arc with Cheetah, where, like, she goes bad, but she, like, we see her. I'm assuming they're going to set him up initially as friendly at the beginning, as is usually the case with Cheetah. And then maybe they want to do, like, a redemptive arc where she's redeemed at the end of the movie, in which case it's easier if there's a different villain to focus on. The other thing I wonder is if they go the Black Manta route that Aquaman did, where they set up Cheetah in this movie, but she doesn't ultimately factor into the end of the film.
And setting her up for a different film. That's an interesting concept, too.
I mean, and maybe it's the other way around. Maybe Max is the one that's set up for a future film. That seems unlikely. I feel like Max is probably the bad guy in this movie. I don't know. The only thing that would surprise me if they go the Black Manta route, I would not necessarily dislike that. I think I would be okay with that. Is that that was like the first character that they announced was in this movie. So that would be a little odd. But I don't know. I'm curious to see what we're going to get, because those are both great Wonder Woman villains. They've got great actors playing both of those characters. I'm very excited to see what this movie's going to do.
Yeah, me too. All right, and for our next bit of DC news, Batwoman has been picked up for a full season of 22 episodes. That's pretty exciting. And after seeing several episodes of Batwoman, the show's starting to finally find its footing, so, which is good. I knew it'd take a little while to get off the ground.
I agree with you. And is anybody really surprised it got a full season? I think it had to have been pretty bad. I think, to be totally honest with you, I think it would have needed to have been really not good. In which case, it probably wouldn't have even gotten the pilot. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, as soon as I saw the pilot, I was like, this is going to be at least a 4 or 5 season show. Like, I like it. It's passably good, and that's like all CW needs.
Yep. All right, and for our final bit of DC news, Superman and Lois series is in development at the CW, starring Tyler Hoechlin and Elizabeth Tulloch. And the show will follow the world's most famous superhero and comic book's most famous journalist as they deal with all the stress, pressures, and complexities that come with being working parents in today's society. So we're going to get the family, the super family, which I'm very excited about. I'm not expecting John to be grown up or anything, but if they come back into the show with John being born already, that'd be cool.
I think he will be. I wouldn't be shocked if we see some progress from Crisis on Infinite Earths with that. You know, I think we're going to get, because we know, at least in theory, in Supergirl right now, he's off on, shoot, what's the city's name?
Is it Argo City?
Argo, yeah, thank you. I wanted to say Kandor, and I knew that wasn't right. Yeah, he's off in Argo City. I feel like at this point the baby probably has been born. So I would assume by the time that show rolls around would be next year. I would think it's going to be them raising an infant. I think is
Yeah,
probably the route they would go.
that's what I was thinking too. So, very
I'm
interesting.
excited. That's
Yeah.
really cool. I mean, we've heard rumors and rumblings of this before. I mean, once Hoechlin got his first like debut appearance, everybody really liked it, and so it felt kind of inevitable that something would happen with that. As long as DC and Warner Brothers and excuse me, whoever basically gave the okay, it felt inevitable that they would do, if they got permission, that they were going to do that.
Superman getting his own show is huge. And I have a feeling it's going to bring a huge audience to it. Maybe not watching it live, but at least streaming. And I'm guessing it's going to be, once it gets going, I guarantee it's going to be the number one show on CW.
Probably. I think Flash would be the only one that would maybe be able to still beat it just because it's got such a built-in audience.
Yeah. But I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of that audience is also watching Superman and Lois, so.
Right. Oh, yeah. I would assume it would be a near complete overlap.
So.
The pilot for sure, I would bet, is going to get huge numbers. The big thing will be seeing how big is like episode 3. That would be the thing.
Yeah. I already see it in the works. Superman and Flash race.
Yeah, I like I said, I'm really excited that this show looks like it might be taking off. We know Arrow's ending. I really feel like it, another one of these shows is ending. Do we know, is Legends done, or is it,
I haven't heard anything about Legends.
it's just sort of
Let
up to, I feel, part of me feels like Legends every year is on like a rental basis. Like, it's like you've got 1 year, and if the numbers go too far down, they're done. I don't know if that's just me. It always feels like that show is on the brink.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? But they keep knocking it out of the park every year with that show.
Oh, I agree with you. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that it should be canceled, but numbers-wise, it is always the one that's closest to the chopping block. That and Supergirl. So I wonder, we know Arrow's off, so that's opening the schedule up a little bit, but they're already still crowded even with that. Feel like another one of these might go.
That's possible. Or we're going to start getting shows different seasons of the year.
Yeah, and that's entirely, and maybe that's just Legends just stays that way. Maybe it just becomes an off-season show.
Yeah, which I think it would do good off season because people would tune in for it because other stuff's not on. So exciting stuff. We're getting lots of stuff. We're getting so much stuff we can't cover everything anymore.
I have to say, part of me, the other reason I think that CW might get rid of one is because from a personal interest, and it's so hard to keep up with all of them. It would be easier if there was like two less shows, as much as I like them.
All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
My name is Quoth. I tread paths by moonlight that others fear to speak of during the day. I've talked to gods, loved women, and written songs that make the minstrels weep. You may have heard of me. Join Mandy and her friends as they explore Patrick Rothfuss's best-selling fantasy series, The Kingkiller Chronicle. You can find us at casterquest.com or on the ESO Network.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. For you.
All right, let's talk Aquaman number 53. So, this issue opens up with Mira looking at the destruction of the statues at the Sacred Garden, and she is able to track a ship's energy signature to Amnesty Bay. We also learn that Tristram Marrer is the monster that killed Ralph, and Tristram tells the story of his origin and of the monsters that have been haunting him since he was boy. So that was kind of interesting to learn his backstory.
It was, but it was also, they didn't give quite enough detail. Like, he has that line where, like, I am the monster, but I'm also not the monster sort of thing. It's weird. It's almost like it's a part of him, but isn't, I didn't feel like the comic did a great job fully explaining how that whole thing works. And I don't know if that might be intentional, because it's saving it for next issue or the issue after that. I don't know. But I didn't feel like I fully understood what his deal was.
I felt the comic did that intentionally. At least that's what I felt like when I read it. Because you're right. They didn't flesh it out fully. It was like it was left kind of vague.
This is a nitpick, but it was one that bothered me. When I was reading this, they couldn't make up their mind how he was talking. Like, occasionally he was talking like he was 200 years old, which makes sense. And then he was talking like he just lived in 2019. And it was, I found it very conflicting. I'm not going to lie, because he would jump back and forth between the speaking styles, and I'd be like, which one is it? You got to pick one.
I didn't notice as much. Maybe that's because I was more attuned to trying to figure out his backstory.
Yeah, that's well, but it really, honestly, it was the fact that when he was talking like he was from 2019, really, that was jarring to me. Because I was like, where would you have picked this up? You have not been around for 200 years. and there was just, I don't know, it was weird. I know, and I like I said, I know that's a stupid nitpick, but it really did throw me off when I was reading. I was like, come on, this is... I think it threw me off more because occasionally it was like the writer remember, like, oh yeah, he shouldn't be talking like this, but then was like, didn't care enough to change all of the dialogue.
And we get towards the end of the issue, and Black Manta shows up. And of course, he's wanting revenge.
This was another part that I thought was a little unclear. Did he just drown his whole crew? It kind of made it seem like he did, right? Because you see him in one seat, and then all of a sudden he's turned something. You see water falling into the room that he's in, and then he goes into his robot father. But the crew on the other ship is looking back like, Captain, where'd you go? And it was like, well, that just unnecessary, right? Like, what was the point of that? I'm just going to casually kill this. I'm just going to lose this submarine for no reason and kill this crew again for no discernible reason other than I'm a bad guy.
Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense, does it?
But I don't really know any other way to interpret that scene. And other than maybe he just leaves. It was weird. I think I wouldn't have looked at it that way if they, it was the cutback scene to the cabin where his crew is looking for him briefly, like, Captain, where are you? That was like, wait, did he just kill them? It was a weird scene. I feel like if you had taken that panel out, I wouldn't have made that conclusion. And I will fully admit, I could be completely reading way too far into it, and he really is just leaving the sub and going over to his robo-dad. But again, it was just unnecessary. Like, that whole sequence was unnecessary, in my opinion. Like, why not just be in the robo-dad the whole time? There was nothing story-wise there that we needed to see.
I'm looking at it, but I see he left the sub, but it doesn't look like he is abandoning them.
It's that scene. I don't think he abandons the crew, but there's that scene where water is entering the hatch that he's in, and I'm assuming that's just because, like, he's entering that in-between area, so he closes the hatch,
yeah.
Water opens because he's going out into the sea, but it's unclear. And that whole transition is just so unnecessary. It was visually confusing for no reason.
The water doesn't really make sense because you don't even see the if you look up there, you don't see the hatch open. There's no water falling in.
So. And that's my point. And that might just be the artist not fully drawing the scene well. I don't know. Again, he probably doesn't drown the crew, because why? Why would you just destroy your sub for no reason? But the whole thing just, like, I don't know. It just really didn't make sense.
I think you're just nitpicking too much.
I really didn't need to nitpick. I was legitimately confused by that scene. I reread that page several times, and I was like, did he just kill the crew?
I don't think he killed the crew.
You're probably right. I really didn't mean as a nitpick. I was legitimately confused by that scene.
And then, of course, when we get to the end of this issue, of course, and we have the old Doom symbol in the sky, which we are starting to see at the end of a lot of comics now.
I gotta say, I found the transition from the Lovecraftian story that we've got with the lighthouse to Black Manta was jarring. It didn't really feel like it felt like it belonged.
Probably because they had to include it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree, and I'm sure you're right, but I didn't really like it, but I almost preferred the completely separate stories that made no sense together. They were at least their own things. And now we've got two stories that have nothing to do with each other colliding, and it's like, what the hell is going on?
Something tells me we're going to be transitioning over to Black Manta before we finish this other story.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Batman number 81. This issue opens up with Thomas Wayne pointing a gun at Damian's head. And we see that he goes, I can't, not my family. And we see Damian responds, oh, you irrelevant old man, you're not family. The butler was family. Father is family. And them, they're family. And all of a sudden, Batwoman, Orphan, The Signal, Huntress, Batgirl, and Red Robin all come out. So that was awesome. I was not expecting that whatsoever.
That was pretty cool. And then what we got, so the framing device for this whole comic is Bruce Wayne telling, he's telling Selina.
That's what
the
I
plan.
Thought. Yeah.
And it was really interesting because you saw some things, like it was explaining some things that we hadn't seen or why Bruce had done certain things. Like we found out that he sort of lost on purpose to Bane because he knew he couldn't win. So he's like, since I can't win, I need to lose so that they think I've lost. And then we get the other side of what's going on. But what was interesting, because we had questions last issue, because it seemed like Bruce was pretty confident that Alfred was alive. It seems like that didn't go to plan, and Bruce doesn't know that yet.
Yeah, I got that feeling too.
And then, of course, by the end of the issue, so the other part of the plan was that the Bat family defeats his dad, and that did not happen.
No, it didn't.
That was really interesting too.
Yeah.
I really liked this from a writing standpoint. I thought this was a phenomenal issue. Again, personal taste, I really don't care for JR's artwork. And so this wasn't my favorite issue, which is unfortunate because I thought the writing was phenomenal. I really like the way it's explaining the story. I just visually could not get into it because I was just like, man, like, I don't like this art style.
Poor Detective Bullock, too. At the end of the issue, they got him dancing around naked singing.
That was a little bit jarring, too. I mean, obviously it's jarring because it's Detective Bullock doing all of that first off. But then the artwork shift, very, very different styles of art.
Yeah, but it was more like an epilogue kind of thing. So
it was, yeah, I was, but it was also like, oh, I wish the rest of the comic looked like this. and that's just me. Like I said, I know he has fans. He's had a great career. Props to him. He's not my cup of tea. So I really wish, especially when we're in the end game for this is the end of King's run. Like, this is the culmination of everything. I wish we had some of the best artists that he's had on this run doing it right now, is all I'm saying.
Now, the last panel of this comic also had the Doom symbol in the sky. So this is the second one we've had. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Flash Forward number 2. I was glad that Flash is bringing hope to these worlds. Unfortunately, he's not bringing hope that this title would get any better.
That's a relief. I'm really glad you said that because I read this comic and I was like, oh, I hope Drew doesn't like this.
Oh, man, the dialogue was terrible. The story's just not that interesting.
It's not that interesting. It's really convoluted, like, in an unnecessary way. Like, I don't totally get what's going on. And part of that is because I don't care to fully understand it. I won't lie. Like, I was not putting forth a full effort to understand the story. But also, I was like, dude, like, what are you doing? Like, what is this story?
I can tell you right now, it's a story we're done with.
Well, and I think that's going to be the case for most people, which I think is a shame because it feels like this story is going to have major ramifications on the continuity of Wally West.
I believe so, too. We saw at the end of the issue, we saw Wally's kids. They looked like they were back.
And nobody's going to know what that status quo is because nobody's going to be reading this book.
Yeah, I mean, I read this and I'm like, you know what? I'm done with this one. It's just not good.
No, and I just think, and I also think I'm worried. When we saw the statues of all the people that had died in Heroes in Crisis, I'm worried that they're basically just going to hit an undo button.
Yeah.
Which defeats the whole damn point of that story. I understand being upset that Wally West is basically the bad guy in that story. I get that. I share that frustration because I like Wally West. But that's also, like, that's the point of that story. And you completely, like, cut the legs out from under that story. I hope I'm wrong about that. Ultimately, I won't know because I'm not going to read the rest of the story. But still.
This is supposed to be a redemption arc for him, but it doesn't feel like he's doing any redemptioning. You know what I mean?
There's a difference between having a redemption arc and just hitting an undo button. And this comic feels like a convenient undo button.
Yeah.
Like, it's basically just like, just kidding, that never happened. Which, fine, I guess, but don't waste our time with a whole six-issue story. Like, if you're just going to do that, it's incredibly lazy. So don't do six issues acting like you're not doing something that's the laziest possible way to get around the consequences of that story.
All right, let's move on. All right. Moving on to Justice League number 34. The different teams of the Justice League are able to bring back the totality fragments, and Starman is able to create a link between all Starmen and open a portal. Unfortunately, enough of the world has sided with Doom, and the seventh energy is unlocked and Perpetua has risen. We see Perpetua gives Mobius back his anti-life powers, transforming him into the anti-monitor that I'm used to seeing. So I was like, hey, that's the anti-monitor I know.
It makes sense. I understand why the anti-monitor would be on Perpetua's side, but there was not enough of a transition there, I didn't think. They went from them teaming up into the Mega Monitor, whatever the hell it was. And then, like, nope, just kidding. He's bad again. I was like, you could have done more than one panel to set that up.
She just had to give him his powers back, and he was evil again.
I just found it. The reason I'm mentioning that is because I found that to be indicative of the last 8 to 9 issues of this that we've gotten, where everything is just happening super fast. Like, it's just bang, 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 bang with all of these developments. There's no time for any of this to sort of settle and for you as the reader to kind of sit there, catch your breath, and kind of like appreciate what's going on, because the next thing's already happening. And then the next thing is already happening after that. So you're like, if you're still trying to think about the one thing, you're like 4 events behind.
Yeah, it is going quick. The other thing we see in this issue is that Starman gets crushed by Perpetua. So I don't know if he's gone or what that means.
And again, I see that should be a big moment. Even if he's not really dead, I should care a lot more about that moment. I really didn't, because it was just like, you're so overwhelmed with all of these, like, this happens and then this happens and then she crushes Starman and then the Anti-Monitor's back and then the Doom symbol pops up, and it's just like, wait, give us a moment, like, spread that moment out across the page, like, give a full page to that moment. And I think it has the impact that you want it to have as a writer. For me, when that happened, I was just sort of like, yeah, whatever. When I don't think that's the point. I think I should care about that, but I kind of don't, because I just assume that he'll be back. And if you didn't bother to spend any time appreciating that moment in the comic, that tells me as a reader that I shouldn't invest that much time in it either.
Yeah, I see your point. I mean, it's still a good comic. It's just, there's a lot going on. He packed a lot into this sucker.
Oh, no, I agree. I think this is a good story. I just don't understand the urgency behind it. I don't know why this couldn't have been, honestly, twice the length that it's been. Maybe that's ridiculous, I don't know, but I really think you could tell this same story in 2 times the number of issues. I think there is more than enough there to fill those issues up.
Well, we know he's leaving the title soon.
Right, and I don't know if maybe that's it. Maybe at a certain point there was something that he knew he was going to do, and he was like, ah, crap, I got to get this done. It kind of feels like that, if I'm being completely honest with you, because the pace of this comic has just gone completely off the rails in the last, I would say, like 9 or 10 issues. I can't remember exactly. Whenever the Doom War thing really started going, the pace has just been bananas. Whereas I thought it was pretty well paced before that. Like, each comic was one thing. Like, this is one step towards this. This is another step towards this. And then now it's just been just constant. This.
Well, one thing you can say about it, it's not boring.
No, it's not. I think it's a shame, because this is a good comic. I think this could be a great comic if it was slowed down a little bit.
I wonder how it's going to read as a trade.
I see. And that's the other thing. I don't know necessarily that this reads that much better as a trade. Because, again, you've got so much happening all at once. Where's the arc start and end exactly? You know what I mean? Like, when they cut this up into trades, where's the pause button, so to speak? Where do you cut this up for the next book? I guess you just go the standard every 6 issues, but I'm fairly certain, I haven't looked back, but I'm fairly certain if you did that, you would be cutting up right in the middle of some stories.
Probably, but I don't know. I don't know how it would read as a trade.
I don't even necessarily mean that as a criticism. I think it's actually been written pretty well for single issues, because I feel like there has been... they've given you reasons consistently to want to read the next issue.
Oh, definitely. You're
like, oh, what's going to happen next? That's great. So that's a big thing. If you're going to push for it being issue by issue, that's a big thing. They've totally checked that box. And then there's a lot that happens in each issue. So in a lot of ways, it feels a little bit like an old school comic, which I think is the point, where everything is sort of happening in one issue. But we've gotten even faster than that. And now we're getting like multiple arcs almost within a single comic. You're like, what is going on? Like, Aquaman's back, and then Aquaman's not important anymore. He's just there on the team. And then Starman's crushed, but then Hot Girl's wings aren't working again anymore. And it's just, there's just so much. There's so much.
There is. There is.
It's just a little bit too much for the speed that we're going at, if that makes sense. There's nothing about any of the plot developments that I don't like. I think it's all really good stuff. I just wish that you let the reader breathe a little bit.
Yeah, you could tell it's coming to an end very soon.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our last title for this week. Jimmy Olsen, number 4. Another great issue of Timmy Olsen.
What a jerk.
No kidding.
I love it too. He's like, the meaner I get, the more views I get.
I loved all the Batman jokes in this issue.
Oh my gosh, the stealing the Batmobile wheel was just so funny.
It was. And then the revolving door at Arkham. Thought that was funny.
That might have been my favorite joke in the comic. That one was great.
We get
that, or when he's screaming out, "Bruce Wayne, you're Batman, right?"
That was funny too. We got Batman punching Jimmy because of all the Jokers, and then also like Dr. Fate and the Bees.
Another thing, not necessarily funny, but a really clever comic thing that they did that I really liked is when he's going over his wall of crazy, they kind of give you a visual path for the reader to where your eye should be going, and Jimmy's kind of following that along on a string. That was super clever. I really like that from an artistic standpoint. That was amazing.
The other thing I thought was freaking hilarious in this was the fact that Jimmy kept slapping cigarettes and vape.
Vapes are for teens, Lois.
Oh, I thought that was hilarious. And we got more history with the Joakim Olsen. I love that story, the older story.
Yeah.
Lex Luthor being behind it all, that was funny too.
I almost wonder if he though?
I don't know.
There seems to be a suggestion that maybe he wasn't actually behind it.
I don't know.
I don't know either. I'm kind of curious. Part of me actually thinks that he's not. Or that he's not the full picture.
Yeah. That might just be to throw us off. But this comic is fun. One thing I love about it, it's just fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's hilarious. Yeah. It's such a well-written comic. Like I said, the artwork has been really good. That full-page spread with the Wall of Crazy was phenomenal comics art.
So, I'm really enjoying this title. I look forward to it every time it comes out. So,
this is a book that's definitely going to be in the running for an Eisner. There's no question in my mind.
Yeah.
Like, it ticks all of the boxes that they want for those sorts of comics.
If it does, it deserves it. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our DC television shows.
We are the Cigar Nerds, bringing nerdy sophistication and geeky indulgence on all topics, including movies, video games, science, and pop culture news, all from the Nerd Cave Cigar Lounge. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and wherever fine podcasts are found, including ESONetwork.com and CigarNerdPodcast.com. So fire up a cigar. It's time to get nerdy.
And we're back. Let's talk Batwoman Season 1, Episode 3, Down, Down, Down. Down the rabbit hole. So the episode opens up with Alice having a bad dream where she's still a kid, walking around a creepy basement and finding a sink with somebody's face floating in it. Yes, Alice Beth is disturbed.
That was pretty dark. That was one of the darker things I've seen on a CW show for the superhero stuff.
Oh yeah, same here. It was really dark. It was almost like you're watching a horror movie or something. We get Tommy Elliot introduced in this episode. Tommy is Bruce's best friend from his childhood, and it's safe to say he has an obsession with trying to outdo Bruce. bigger building, more money. And I noticed this version of Tommy Elliot is into real estate and he's not a doctor. Later on in this episode, we discover that Batman had saved Tommy's mother, but she had become a vegetable and Tommy blamed Batman for it. We see Tommy steals a weapon from Wayne Tech that can penetrate Batman's suit. He's positive that Bruce is back in town because of all the Batman sightings. So Tommy lays a trap for him, only to be disappointed when Batwoman shows up.
We were wondering when they said that Tommy Elliot was going to be on the show, whether he was going to be a long-running villain or not. It seems like the answer is no, which ultimately is a good thing because this was a horrible version of him. They like hit on a couple things that are true from the comic. Childhood friend. The fact that Bruce somehow, like Tommy wants his parents dead to get the money. That's the case in the comic too. And it doesn't happen and he holds Bruce responsible for that. That's true. And then that's about it. This was such a dumb version of the character. Like, I don't understand. We're seeing a kind of a resurgence with Hush, but then they're not doing the full version of that character that made him popular. Like, that story was successful for a reason. Why don't you just do that version of the character? How hard is that?
Apparently it's hard because they're not doing it in the show and they're not doing it well in the comic either.
I did think it was interesting too that we found that he mentions the basic, like without directly saying it, that the Riddler is the one who told him who Bruce is.
Oh, did he? I don't remember that.
Yeah, he said something. It was like, he doesn't directly say the Riddler. He says something about having somebody solve the riddle, or he uses the word riddle, and he's clearly trying to say that the Riddler figured it out for him. Like, he paid the Riddler to figure it out.
Okay. I missed that.
It was a quick, like I said, it was a quick line, and he doesn't explicitly say it. He sort of, you know, uses a little wordplay to strongly suggest that that's how he figured it out. Which also makes sense, because this Tommy Elliot's not that smart.
No. And it seemed weird that they switched up him being into real estate instead of being a doctor, too. But I guess that would make sense, since his mother was a vegetable and...
I think the reason they went with that was to explain, like, so the reason they, I think the reason they went with that, it was the easiest way to explain how he would get his hands on this stuff. Like, if he's a doctor, what's he doing buying a building and things like that? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's easier to explain all of that. Like, he's buying this and he's acquiring these things as a real estate guy under the guise of actually trying to take out Bruce Wayne. Regardless, this was such a, and like, it was clearly a villain of the week, and it was like, this is a mate, that's like having Bane be a villain of the week. I know he's not as big as Bane, but still, like, that's a major character. It's one thing to have Godspeed be a villain of the week, because he's really only had one true arc and was not nearly as popular as Hush was for his one big arc. That, like, it's disappointing, but I get it. Hush? Really? Like, you couldn't even give him two episodes and actually, you know, make him Hush?
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. Now, I'm finding the relationship between Kate and Alice interesting, especially in this episode. There's a definite love-hate relationship between the two twins at the moment. And you can tell Alice has a fondness for her sister, but Alice also reminds Kate that Beth is dead. I was just going to say, I can tell you something's going to happen further in this series that is going to cause these two to become great arch enemies.
Probably. I think it's interesting because it seems like they're trying to do their own twist on the Batman and Joker, right?
Yeah.
We always have that sort of thing between the dichotomy between the two. But then also that sort of, there's a lot of writers that like to get into the fact that they both kind of maybe need each other, or at least the Joker needs Batman. And maybe Batman needs the Joker, and they're kind of going a different route. Like, well, what if the love-hate was stronger on the love side, right? Like, what if the connection between the two was stronger, but there's still that sort of oppositional force? It's interesting. I do think it's intentional. I do think she's supposed to be her Joker, but they're doing it in a different way that makes it interesting, and it's not just obviously the Joker, but a girl.
Right. I agree with you there. The other thing we had in this episode, the bartender that Kate meets, seems like we got the beginnings of a possible romance going. And Sophie looked just a tad bit jealous.
Okay, do you feel, my girlfriend's watching this show with me. She doesn't watch all the CW ones, but she's been watching this one with me and she likes it. But the one thing that she has not liked, and I agree with her, and I'm curious what you think. We both feel really uncomfortable with that storyline. Not the bartender would be a welcome storyline. She's married.
Yes.
I don't like that. Like, it feels like the show wants me to be rooting for those two to get back together, and I don't feel comfortable doing that. At least at the moment, the guy's just a good dude.
He is.
As far as we know right now.
This is my feelings on it, because it feels like, to me, it feels like the show's wanting to get them back together. And I think where the show is moving to, or at least that's what I'm feeling like, is that Sophie is living a lie, and at some point she is going to have to admit to herself that, you know, that she's living this marriage that's a lie. And she's just doing it for looks, and not that she's really in love with this dude or anything. That's what I feel like, and that she's eventually going to leave him. That's the feeling I've got this whole season so far while I'm watching the show.
I think you have a pretty strong case there. The only thing is, we did get that one scene where the two are sparring together. I think it was this episode, right? And like, that's the sort of scene that, why would you put that in there if you're trying to emphasize the living the lie scene?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And then my big concern is, I hope they don't deal with this the way they dealt with. Remember when Jimmy Olsen was married? I really did not like that either. When you had the sort of like him falling for Kara, but he's married, and you're like, well, but I don't feel married.
Was he married? I thought he was just dating.
Was he? Oh, I thought they were married. Maybe I'm wrong. I could have sworn they were married.
I think they were just dating. And they were, you know, they were dating in different cities or something, because James had moved to...
I thought they were stronger than dating. I thought they were at least engaged.
They might have been engaged. I can't remember. But, you know, that ended up getting called off.
I can't remember now. I really thought they were... I thought it was stronger than just a boyfriend-girlfriend thing. But regardless, like, I didn't feel good about that. Like, when he breaks it off with her so that he can be a Supergirl... I didn't like that. I wasn't sitting there like, oh, yeah, good for you. I was like, you jerk.
And then it didn't even go anywhere. So what's the point?
And it was all for nothing. It was all for nothing. The show just pretends like she never existed. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of this. Like, I'm totally fine. Like, if they want her to be, like, her and Batwoman to be together, ultimately, I'm cool with that. That's fine. But don't, like... have some other obstacle other than her being married already, in my opinion. I just find, I personally am not a huge fan of that, because then, like, I think the intent is for us to empathize with the two women. And I certainly empathize with Batwoman. She hasn't done anything wrong.
No,
she hasn't. I empathize with her, where she, like, wants somebody, but she knows she can't have her. I totally empathize with her. And Batwoman's not doing anything wrong in that relationship right now.
No, and she's trying to move on too, so.
But I don't empathize with the other gal. Like, it's like, you're married.
Yes. Like, she made her choice.
You made your choice. If you decide that you really want to be with Batwoman instead, that needs to be addressed first before you start doing the Batwoman stuff. I'm just saying. I don't know. I'm curious to see where it seems inevitable that the two of them are going to get together. I'd be shocked if that doesn't happen. It feels like the bartender is going to be a little bit like the police girl on Flash, who I really liked, and then they just wrote off the show.
Yeah. They never brought her back either.
Oh, she was great. Now, don't get me wrong. Iris and Barry are great. They've been phenomenal as a married couple on this show, but I really did like that character.
Yeah, I liked her too, but... They've already moved past on that. So.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And I feel that's what this bartender feels like she's going to be, is a sort of temporary obstacle.
And you may be right. All right. Well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Supergirl, Season 5, Episode 3, Blurred Lines. So, when this episode opens up, William is meeting Dr. Niles Gerard at a bar. He warns Gerard against blowing him off again, and I'm wondering now if William might be working for Leviathan.
I think he's almost certainly working for Leviathan.
Because he's being paid by someone. Now, Gerard ignores William and hooks up with a tattooed woman in the bathroom. And when she rips open his shirt, her tattoo comes to life, and a spider crawls off onto his chest and kills him.
That whole thing was so comical, though. Like, they did, like, the barest bones version of that. You knew something was going to happen.
Oh,
you
yeah.
had sort of, like, the spider, like, jump onto him, crawl into his chest, and, like, and fell over. And then they, like, cut before she had even fully walked away. It was like, what are you guys doing? I'm just gonna start this now because I don't think I can wait until you summarize the whole episode.
Go ahead.
Supergirl's been bad. I'm just gonna throw it out there. This has not been a good show. It's we're recording this. Several other episodes have aired already. A scene from episode 4 went viral recently on how bad it was. And so we're not even to that point yet, but with this episode, you got a scene like that where you get that weird clunky death, and then a lot of the dialogue throughout this episode and the cuts. It's just sloppy writing. It's really sloppy directing. The acting feels like they're phoning it in. There's no like transitions from scene to scene. Like they're talking in the DEO and all of a sudden Dreamer's waking up from a nightmare and you're like, wait, what? What the hell is going on? What happened? What happened to this show? It just had its best season last year.
Yeah, and it's not on this episode, but we got some... We're getting ahead of ourselves, but there's some bad CGI, too, in one of the episodes.
That's what I'm talking about. So that goes viral for the CGI, but really, like, it's the acting, too. But that acting has been what we've been seeing in this first three episodes. Like, focusing on this episode here, the acting is not great. Actors who I've seen do a better job feels like they're all just sort of phoning it in. The writing is not good. The direction, like the actual television making part, the transitions from scene to scene are just not present. And so you're getting these weird, jarring jumps from Lena's lab to all of a sudden they're doing something else. All of a sudden they're over here. And you're like, what is going on? What is the story that you're trying to tell right now? Is it just me? Like this, it's not good. This show is not good right now.
Plus they're trying to pack a lot of stuff in it.
What the hell is Sean Austin doing in this episode? Where did he come from? It was like, oh cool, it's Samwise, but like, why? We didn't know that. Am I wrong? We didn't know that character before this.
No, they just introduced that character.
But it was just the Martian, and it was like, we knew it was the Martian, but they like communicated that in the most weird way. I was just like, I don't feel any connection to this disguise that he has because I don't know who that is. It could have been Barack Obama. I'd have been like, what is he doing in this?
Well, the whole reason he was. Apparently, one of Kelly's old friends, Pete, and he comes in. They haven't talked for like ever, so he's coming in out of the blue. I've got problem, you know, I'm having problems and stuff. And all he was trying to do was trick her into getting his powers back.
But there was nothing there. Like, you got to lay more groundwork. You either have to lay more groundwork in what the Martian is trying to do. First off, that has to happen regardless. Secondly, if you want to have a character come in and trick her, you have to let the audience know what the heck is going on. Because it was like, why? I didn't understand why she would believe this. Like, what about him, the real person that he's impersonating, would make her think that this is all reasonable stuff? I don't know. Like, and it's the thing. Like, if is the guy that she knows in real life also troubled? Martian know that? How would he know that?
He can read minds, Cletus.
He can't, though. He can't read minds, remember?
Yeah, I don't know.
That was the whole point of this episode, Drew.
I don't know, because it doesn't make any sense.
That's what I was saying. Like I said, I guess it's cool that he was on the show, but, like, why? To what end? I don't get it. I don't know what the hell happened with this show, but it is bad. I have not said that very frequently about some of the CW shows. This season has not been good. My girlfriend, who's, like, so I said, so she does not watch all the CW shows. She really only, traditionally, she only watches Flash and Supergirl and occasionally Legends. Really only if I'm watching and she happens to walk in, she'll watch it a little bit with me. But it's really just Flash and Supergirl and now Batwoman. She's out on Supergirl.
She's out.
She's out. After episode 2, she's like, yeah, I'm good. You could. I'm sorry, you have to keep watching this. I was like, and she is not hard. You've met her, Drew. She's not the kind of person that is harsh on those sorts of things. And she was just like, yeah, I'm just not going to watch this.
Oh, man, I find that surprising, but it does make sense.
Yeah.
Would you think about Lena manipulating Kara into getting Lex's journals?
I thought that was a joke. I thought that scene was so dumb. I think it's interesting what Lena is doing. I find Lena's plan on paper interesting, but the actual execution of it that we got on screen was dumb, I guess is the right word. She's just like, oh, the only way I can process this is if I get this secret journal that's located in this exact location. And if you were to use this combination, you could get there. But I don't want you to do that. And Supergirl's like, oh, okay, I'll go do that.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I think Lena did a good job of manipulating her, but why
did she?
Supergirl...
Did she actually do a good job, or did the show just say she did a good job and had Supergirl just, like, check her brain out?
That's what I'm talking about. I think Kara was being so blind to please Lena that Lena's lame excuses for needing the journal worked.
But I don't like that, though, because Lena's smart enough to not use a lame excuse.
Okay, I have to agree with you on that.
I get your point, and I don't necessarily disagree with you, Drew. I do get that, because Supergirl is so, like, distraught that she'll do anything. But, like, she's not a moron. And also, Lena's not a moron. Lena's definitely not a moron. It's like, she could absolutely come up with a better way to convince Kara of doing that.
Oh, yeah.
I can buy into Lena convincing Supergirl to do that. I have no problem accepting that that would happen. It was the way that they did it. It was like, come on, guys. Like, you really couldn't come up with something better than this? Like, what if she was like, oh, hey, I just realized that this, like, Lena, what really I feel like Lena would have done is manufacture some crisis that the only way that they can solve it is if Supergirl goes and gets those journals.
Yeah.
Right?
That would have been a lot better and make more sense for Lena's character.
Move.
Yeah.
I'm not being paid to write the show. You know what I mean? Like, if I can come up with that, writers for the show should come up with that. I'm not that clever. They should be able to come up with that too.
Hey, I'm not going to disagree that you're not that clever.
No, but I'm not trying to say that I'm coming up with some genius idea. I think most people who watch the show would think that would be a better solution. I just apparently not the writer staff though.
All right, we need to get moving on to other stuff. Let's move on to Black Lightning Season 3, Episode 3, The Book of Occupation, Chapter 3, Agent Odell's Pipe Dream. Odell.
They finally changed his suit. I'm cutting you off. They already changed his suit. I'm so happy.
I know. His new suit is awesome.
Woo. All right. I'll let you get into the rest. I just had to. This could have been a crap episode. And if he had changed his suit, I still would have liked it.
All right. Here's my first comment. Odell is ruling Freeland from his government back throne. It feels like he's opened every conversation with a reminder that we are at war and that the Markovians are an immediate threat.
His manipulation is impressive because he is playing 4D chess right now. Like, he's manipulating all sides.
He is. If you ask me, he is the villain behind this episode, or behind this this season so far.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no question. I don't think the Markovians are actually the threat of this season at all. It's definitely him.
Yeah. Now, last episode, one of Chief Henderson's officers was arrested for being a green light user and a suspected Meta. And when he visits her at the Meta detention facility in this episode, she is deadly sick. And it seems like Chief Henderson has lost control in Freeland, and he doesn't like it. We get the scene in this episode where this old woman comes up and smacks him in the face and blames him for making things worse. And I don't know, it kind of felt like a turning point for Chief Henderson, and it feels like we might find him fighting back more next episode. At least I hope so.
I think he wants to. He's just, I mean, that dude's in a tough spot.
He is.
The ASA really has a tight grip on that city.
They do. Then they got Black Lightning under the thumb. I mean, they set him up with that. Okay, I gotta tell you, what is with the CW shows this season with Supergirl takes off her glasses and her suit magically appears? Or Black Lightning gets a new watch and his suit magically appears out of it. Are we going to be getting the Flash getting a ring with his costume coming out of it?
I got to say, the Black Lightning one, I know they're both absurd science fiction things, but the Black Lightning one makes a little more sense, I guess, because it's powered by his electricity. The Supergirl one, I thought, is the one that's really weird, that like her glasses come off and the suit appears. That one doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't.
And I know, it's a show about a flying girl who can shoot lasers out of her eyes, but it was like, okay. The Black Lightning one, I can swallow that pill easier.
So, yeah, I do not like the Supergirl glasses thing, but I do like the Black Lightning watch thing. But even, it does seem like they're having this tech suit theme going this season. So... But I love Black Lightning's new costume. I think it looks awesome.
It doesn't have the cheap plastic on the front of it. Like, it looked like a Halloween costume. It looked like a very expensive Halloween costume. And obviously, I mean, technically this one could be too. But this one looks good. This one looks like he won't look out of place next to the other heroes in the Crisis crossover.
Yeah. And maybe that's one reason they had to switch up his costume.
Possibly. I also feel, I don't think we were in the minority on the costume. I think most people didn't like it.
I like that they switch up the on all the shows they've been switching up costumes. So I think the person's costume who gets less switched up is probably Arrow.
Even he's had quite a few.
Yeah, he has. But as we got into the later seasons, it didn't seem like they were switching it up as much. Probably because they finally got a good look for him.
It's been minor tweaks. Like, his costume this season is slightly different than it was last year. It's just really, like, you wouldn't really know if you weren't, like, paying close attention. Whereas, comparatively, the Black Lightning one, or, like, Flash has had a couple major costume haulovers. Green Arrow really only had the one where they went sleeveless for a year and then went back. But, man, yeah, I agree. This costume's great. I'm a big fan of it.
The other thing we have in this episode, we see that Odell pays Tobias a visit. And Odell wants that briefcase. We see him, first he tries torturing Tobias, and when that doesn't work, he tries offering him back his old territory. But what's surprising is Tobias refuses because he wants more. He tries to get more out of Odell, but what's funny is he's in no position really to be asking for more.
It kind of seems like he is, though. It doesn't seem like he is in the right position, but I actually think he is, because Odell clearly clearly really needs that briefcase. Like, has to have it.
Yeah, it does.
Otherwise, I think he'd have just killed Tobias already, and I think Tobias knows that. And so even though his life sucks, like, it's just miserable, he'd be dead. There's no reason for him to still be alive other than Odell needs him alive.
Yeah. Okay, I agree with you on there. One of the things we see in this episode is we see Jennifer fly for the first time, and she seems very powerful as we see that she destroys that Markovian data farm with just two blasts.
That was a big jump for her, like, control of her powers, right?
Yeah.
Like, we kind of went from 0 to 60 there.
Yes, we kind of did. And Odell seems like he's starting to get her under control. You know what I mean? Getting his thumb put on her.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm not going to lie. When he first popped up at the house, I thought he was infecting her with that handkerchief. He tells her that, yeah, Khalil's mom died. Lies about how that happened.
Obviously. Oh, yeah.
And then he hands her a handkerchief, which is, like, obviously a thing the characters do on TV. But also, I was like, that handkerchief's infected. There's no doubt in my mind. And then she didn't get sick, and I was like, okay, maybe I was wrong. I thought he was going to infect her to, like, give the wife more reason to get the cure fast. Be like, hey, your daughter got it. Better get a cure.
Yeah, that I could see him doing that. But he's got other plans for Jennifer.
Clearly, yeah. Like I said, I realized I was wrong at a certain point in the episode, but when that happened, in that moment, I was like, oh, no. You're sick now.
The only one it seems like they have any sort of freedom in this season is Anissa, and she's going around as Blackbird.
I have to say, how do they not know that it's the same person?
I don't know, Cletus, because I'm like, why haven't they figured that out yet? I know
how, like, Odell is so smart. Like, the show has made it clear that dude is three steps ahead of most people, except for Tobias. Come on. I mean, come on. How have you not figured that out? He figured out who Black Lightning and his whole family was. He can't figure out that Thunder and Blackbird are the same person? Really? Especially when she picked up and threw the tank. I mean, come on. Also, we feel like we kind of glazed over the fact that she probably murdered whoever was in that helicopter.
Probably. And it looks like Anissa and her old girlfriend Grace are going to be getting back together too soon. So, a lot of stuff going on in Black Lightning.
That felt a little... I want to circle back to that real quick. That kind of came out of nowhere, right? Black Lightning as a show seems to do that every once in a while, that they'll just be like, oh yeah, this character that is an ongoing character is back now, with no explanation.
Yeah, well, and they just kind of roll with it. Lala is a perfect example of that.
Absolutely, and the girlfriend, I think, is like example two of that. Like, it's those two, they just like pull in and out of the show. She just hooked up with that journalist. And then, like, I was glad that the show gave us a scene to deal with that, because I was like, wait, you just did this. And so we got that scene that sort of wrapped that up, and now she's back with the girlfriend, which is fine. But, like, what's going on with that? Where did that come from?
That's a good question. So that's just how the show does stuff. So once in a while,
I swear that it's like they forget about some of these characters sometimes, though. I'm not gonna lie, like there are times where it doesn't feel like they laid the groundwork for a late season surprise. It feels like they're like, oh right, I've totally forgot about them, we should bring them back.
and then they do,
which is nice. Yeah. I have to admit, it does not feel planned a lot of the time. Like, this reappearance of the girlfriend did not feel like it was intended to pop up.
But yet it did.
It did.
But you got to admit, though, Black Lightning still is a really good show.
Oh, yes. No, I totally agree. It's just it's the one bizarre quirk about the show, I have to say. Like, everything else I consistently really enjoy about it, especially now that his costume's changed. But the one weird quirk that show has is the just sort of odd shuffling of characters. They're like, oh yeah, this, like, and what about like Gambi? Where the hell was Gambi?
I know. They just.
Nothing? All episode?
Yep. He's hiding. He's hiding out.
I'm sure it probably was something to do with the actor, and that's fine, but it's just odd. It's just that one weird thing with Black Lightning as a show. They just rotate characters in without any sort of notice or build up.
You don't need any notice. Oh, well. I still enjoy the show a lot, so.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I agree.
All right. Let's move on to our next episode for this week. Flash, Season 6, Episode 3, Dead Man Running. So this episode opens up with Barry and Iris telling Team Flash about the upcoming crisis, but leaving out the part where Barry is destined to die to save the Earth. Barry realizes Frost may need a bit more guidance and decides to mentor her the rest of this episode. So Barry brings Frost with him to a crime scene where a bunch of arms dealers were brutally murdered by Mitch Romero, the guy Ramsey hit with the black goo. They discover that Mitch Romero had been dead for 24 hours and that the dark matter that he is stealing is strengthening his body. Now, after learning about Romero's zombie existence, Ramsey offers to come to Star Labs and help with a dark matter powered serum that would weaken Romero. And of course, it's all a pretext because he just wants to steal some dark matter. And Barry gives him one of his hero speeches that that he agrees to give back the black matter.
I could have done without that scene. I'm not going to lie. I know that they probably put that in there for, I'm sure that's probably going to pay off later in the season, that scene. But in the moment, I was like, ah, come on. We know that he's still going to be the villain. We know he's the villain of at least half the season, if not the full season.
Yep.
So, don't waste our time.
With the day saved, Ramsey heads back to his lab, intent on experimenting with the human blood cells, supercharged by the dark matter, which he believes is the key to curing his HLH and any human disease. Unfortunately, he's going to need more of his human trials after he absorbs what little he has to salvage, and we see the origin of blood work here.
I was a little bit confused. I thought he had figured out his powers last episode.
See, you weren't the only one that was confused by that, because I thought he did too.
And then it seemed like he sort of like did, I don't know, that I found very odd. Especially being a researcher that he is, you think he would have investigated that? What the hell happened to my arm? Why did I shoot something out of my arm into this guy and then he's fine? Like, what? Like, all of those things. So I was like, you didn't figure out what happened? But okay. Regardless, we're there now.
Now, I like the Ralph and Cecile team up in this episode.
Okay, can I ask you, so this, both my girlfriend and I were very unclear on this, and we determined ultimately that she is no longer the DA in this episode and is actually representing Ralph's mom, right?
Sure. I don't remember.
If she's the DA, taking the suspect out of custody and to an illegal casino to gather an alibi is unbelievably crossing the line as a DA. Yeah. As Ralph's friend, it makes total sense, but as a DA, whoa, you can't be doing that. If she's already become the meta lawyer, it makes sense what she's doing. But the show, I didn't think the show made that transition clear.
They have not made that transition clear. I agree with you. I'm trying to think back. And I don't remember them specifically stating that she's become the metahuman lawyer yet.
And then it also doesn't totally make sense if she is the metahuman lawyer. Technically, she wouldn't want to represent Ralph's mom, right? Because she's not meta. I understand she would because it's
Ralph's
mom. Yeah. I get that. But like, I really thought that they could have used one line somewhere that clarified that she was not acting as the DA, because if she was, that was highly illegal.
Now, meeting Ralph's mother Makes me understand Ralph's personality a little more. Because she makes Ralph look more like a saint, doesn't she?
She does. I have to say, it was the running joke was funny that all of her that she just told Ralph all of her boyfriends died. But when you like actually sat and thought about it for a second, like Ralph's not a moron.
No, he's
like,
not.
Like, it really wouldn't have occurred to him. Like, that's weird that every single guy my mother has ever dated has died. That wouldn't set any alarms off?
Yeah, it would set
to a detective? It was a funny running joke, but it was like, okay. Come on, he's an adult. Like, he wouldn't have figured it out by now.
Okay, I gotta tell you, one of the craziest things I thought in this episode was Barry throwing a birthday party for Frost, but not inviting anybody from Star Labs. They all come in there like, what's going on here? You're trying to tell me Barry wouldn't invite Cisco and his wife and everybody to Frost's birthday party? I thought that was dumb.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that was weird too. Because she would want them there. I'm pretty sure she considers them her friends.
Yes. So, that I just thought that was stupid. All right. We get to the end of this episode, and we get introduced to a new Harrison Nash Wells. An Indiana Jones-type Wells who is looking for a multiversal element called Eternium. And apparently he found it down a manhole at the end of the episode. Your thoughts on this? On this version of Harrison Wells.
I think he's really interesting. I can't wait to see more with it. That the manhole thing makes me think it's Grodd related, don't you?
You think it has to do with Grodd?
Anytime they've done anything sewer related, it's always been Grodd down there.
Yeah, that didn't come across my mind.
It's just because it's another Harrison Wells. We know the big Wells-Grodd connection with the show. And then he goes down in the sewer. My mind immediately went to Grodd. I'm not gonna lie.
Okay, we'll have to see if you're right next episode.
I don't know necessarily that we would actually see Grodd. Maybe I'm totally off base too. But my mind, when I saw him go down and find something in the sewer, I was like, Grodd? Something to do with Grodd? Or at least something from Harrison Wells when he was doing something down there with Grodd. I don't know.
We'll just have to wait and see what happens next episode.
You're cheating.
Yeah, because I already know what happens. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Arrow, Season 8, Episode 2, Welcome to Hong Kong.
So this one, we're kind of getting what we thought we were going to get with this season, where they were kind of taking a tour of big story arcs from all of the seasons of Arrow. So this one, we got the big, the Hong Kong reunion tour. I have to admit, I did find it surprising that they didn't do anything with the current political climate in Hong Kong. Didn't you? Like, it just seemed like an easy thing to incorporate.
Yeah. But we didn't really need it in this episode, though.
No, but like, It's so big in the news, and even when they would have filmed this, it was going on then too. It's not like it's just started happening. To me, it seemed weird that it wasn't part of, like, they didn't address that at all. I found odd. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, because they like to address that kind of stuff, and
yeah, oh yeah, and it was noticeable. It was like, you're in Hong Kong, and you're not gonna talk about what's going on with this at all. It seemed like it would have been a good backdrop, like a chaotic backdrop that would have allowed for some of these things to happen too, because you get the big thing ultimately is that the virus that was the whole focus of season 3 in the flashbacks, China White's trying to get her hands on again for the triad, or basically just like reliving that plot. I thought that the protest stuff could have really, I think, would have lent an interesting backdrop to all of that. I thought. Even if you're not even saying anything about the protests, just like acknowledging that they're happening and having, like, you know, having that context, I thought would have been interesting. I like that we're continuing this sort of, I don't know if reunion tour is the right word or like trip down memory lane, but I found this episode a little bit weaker only because like this storyline was not that good. And so revisiting it wasn't that satisfying because it was just sort of like, yeah, this is why I didn't like this story. I don't know how you felt.
I have to agree with you. It's been a little weaker than others in this season, but I still like visiting the different places of what's happened during Arrow's all Arrow seasons.
The flashbacks, or flash forwards, I guess I should say, I am so frustrated with them.
Because it jars you out of the other part of the episodes.
It has nothing to do with the show right now, and it's just, it's so frustrating. It's not, I don't think it's that great. It's not the worst. It's just, there are only 10 episodes of this show left. There's less. There's 8 episodes of this show ever left. And we're wasting a third of them each episode on this storyline that nobody cares about. There is not, you cannot tell me, there's not one person that tunes into Arrow primarily because they can't wait to see what happens next with the future team.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with you on this point. But
The flash forwards happen.
And it'll come together at some point. That's all I'm going to say about that because I've seen more episodes than you have.
The only really other major storyline in this episode is, I actually was really pleasantly surprised by this, is the fallout with Black Siren from Earth 2 being wiped out. Honestly wasn't really expecting that to be focused on that much, just because the nature of the CW shows, like, they have big stuff like that happen and then they sort of just like move on for the most part. They really let her kind of deal with that, and I enjoyed that quite a bit. Like, the horror of realizing your entire world, like, literally all of it's gone. Just gone.
Well, she, you know, after she redeemed herself on our Earth, on Earth 1, she goes back and makes a life for herself back there. You know, she, just think about her coming here, redeeming herself, going back, building a life, and then just having it ripped away from her.
Yeah. Oh, no, I totally agree with you. It was a very enjoyable part of the show. I was very glad that they included that. And then going off of that, Lila, unsurprisingly, given that we know she is Harbinger, is working with the Monitor.
Yeah, if we didn't know that tidbit from previews, it would have been kind of a shocker.
Well, not just previews, but like that character classically is Harbinger. Like, you know what I mean? So it's cool that they are actually, they, you know, initially that was definitely just originally meant as an Easter egg. And it's cool that now that they are actually doing Crisis, they're like, oh, well, since we're doing Crisis, we might as well actually make that character Harbinger like she's supposed to be.
Yeah, which is cool.
It is cool.
Not the best episode of Arrow, but it's leading us down a path. So that's what I'm going to say, already seeing future episodes. And some of the things you mentioned in this episode are going to come to fruition soon. So that's all I'm going to say about that. I really enjoyed the most recent episode of Arrow we had. So can't wait to talk to you about that soon.
That's just cruel.
All right, well, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Titans Season 2, Episode 7, Bruce Wayne. I got to tell you, Cletus, I really liked how they used Bruce Wayne as Dick Grayson's conscience in this episode.
This was phenomenal. The Batman 66 dance was an unbelievable Easter egg.
Oh, it was freaking hilarious.
I was watching this with my girlfriend, who's not seen almost any other episode of Titans and has also definitely not seen the old Batman show. And I saw this Bruce Wayne start to do that dance, and I was like giddy. I was like, "Oh my god, I can't believe he's doing that dance!" And she had no idea what I was talking about, so I had to like pause the show and be like, "No, no, 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 you don't understand. This is an amazing Easter egg."
Oh man, it was freaking hilarious.
That was amazing. Like, and I agree with you overall in this episode. I thought he was. The way they played that between the two of them was really well acted, and I really liked it. But that that dance was amazing.
I know.
And what I found, what I thought was really interesting with it too, was that it didn't always totally feel like Bruce Wayne, but that also felt like it was the point with this one, where because it wasn't really Bruce, it was like Dick's view of what Bruce would be doing.
Yeah, you know, it was. It was basically like his consciousness. It's what he thought Bruce would be saying to him, or, you know, how he felt that Bruce would be saying to him. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally. I thought it was. I very much enjoyed that aspect of the show.
And he had him doing some goofy stuff too. Oh man.
Deathstroke's mind games continue to be really interesting. We see in this one he lays a bunch of like personal items out for the different team members that he knows will mess with them. And then they all just uniformly agree that it was Jason. And I found that a little bit odd. I was like, wait, you guys know Deathstroke's out there. At this point, they know that he's at least at large and wants to get back at them for something. And your first thought is, oh, the kid that almost died definitely had time to pull a prank on all of us. What?
Yeah,
I know. Poor kid. I couldn't believe that. I was like, I understand you guys' emotions are all heightened, but come on. That dude almost died and is clearly not over it. Like, if you spend more than 10 seconds with him, you can see that he is not handling it well. At what point would he have been like, ah, you know what'll snap me out of it? A couple good-natured pranks.
Question for it. Was it this episode where Rose comes to his room?
Yes.
Okay. She, I guess it made sense that she felt a connection to him.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree, because they're a little bit kind of on the outside. They're both edgier. What I found interesting in that scene, that record seemed like it was a plant from Deathstroke too, right? Like, I don't think that was actually in Dick's collection that Jason borrowed. I think Deathstroke planted it there for Rose to find.
Interesting.
And I could be wrong about that, but just based on what we saw in the rest of the episode, he's planning all these other things specifically to piss him off and apparently to blame Jason. What a great way to frame him, to put the record in there.
Yeah. But I really enjoyed this episode, and I'm really enjoying this season of Titans a lot better than season one, for sure.
It's much more coherent. There's a clear flow and a clear arc to this whole season, especially once you ignore episode one, which was absolutely meant to be the season finale. So if we just pretend that this season started in episode two, it's been a very clear, well-done arc from there.
Well, if people look at the last episode we re-released, well, it's a while back now, but that episode we released about episode two, I think I called it in the show notes the real premiere.
It really is, though. It really is. Honestly, if I don't know that they would ever do it, but I honestly, it would be, if I was DC, I would be very tempted to just basically take that episode and move it back into season one and just say that it was part of season one. Because it's the finale. It is clearly the finale of that season.
Yep. I still don't understand why they did that.
Imagine if shows did that. Imagine if season one of Flash ended the episode before it did, and then the premiere of season two was the actual final episode of season one.
That'd just be weird.
It would be weird, right?
Yeah.
It would be really weird. That's for people who have not been watching Titans, that's what season two, episode one was. A clear finale to season one, just starting off the next season.
You know, we're pretty much halfway through this season of Titans now.
Yeah, and it's crazy. It doesn't seem like we've seen that many episodes, but like you said, we're already well into the season.
Yeah.
It's been good. I'm really enjoying Deathstroke as the villain. Unsurprisingly, given how good all of these costumes are, they nailed his look. He looks phenomenal. But then also, I really enjoy what the actor is doing with that character.
Yeah, I am too. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Cletus?
Okay, so my shout-out for this week, so we mentioned Max Lord being the villain in Wonder Woman, and really the story that would make him notably a Wonder Woman villain. He's an interesting character because he was part of the kind of the joke Justice League during the 90s.
Yep.
And it was really only in the 2000s that he's all like out of the blue became a villain, and a pretty interesting one. But the kind of the famous story that did that. So in the Countdown to Infinite Crisis special, which was like an 80 page special, that's the one where he famously kills Ted Kord and sort of establishes himself as a bad guy. And you're like, oh crap. Like, because those two, for our listeners who aren't familiar with, like, the 90s Booster Gold, Blue Beetle, JLA run, Justice League International, I guess I should say, Maxwell Lord was, like, the team owner, so to speak. Like, he didn't have any powers. He was just sort of there trying to unsuccessfully run that team well, but they're a joke. And then, so for him to suddenly be revealed as a villain and kill one of the major characters from that team, huge shock. Then what makes him a Wonder Woman villain, so he's revealed to actually have pretty strong psychic powers and is able to take control of people. And in the OMAC project, which was one of the miniseries that led up to Infinite Crisis, in the OMAC project, he takes control of Superman at one point, and Wonder Woman gets the lasso on him and asks him how he can relinquish control of Superman, and he says, kill me. And so she does. And so that's a huge Wonder Woman moment. The whole world finds out about this. It's a obviously massive scandal. Wonder Woman just effectively kills somebody in cold blood. It may be potentially justified as it was. He had control of Superman. Pretty deadly. Major, major Wonder Woman moment in the mid-2000s. She retires for a whole year. Check that story out. So Countdown to Infinite Crisis is a big, like, where he turns out to be a bad guy. And then the OMAC project is sort of one of the lead-ups to Infinite Crisis that deals with his story specifically.
All right, and for my shout-out, since we're talking about crises, I'm going to shout-out about Crisis on Infinite Earths, because we're going to be when the shows go on hiatus, we're going to be talking about the comic series. And just giving you guys a heads-up, pick it up and read it if you haven't, or refresh your brain on it, because we're going to be talking about it soon, and we're going to have guests on for it. So, just giving you a heads up to check that out if you haven't, or if you need a refresher. Alright, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach your feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message. Or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, coming up next time, we'll be doing a recap episode covering everything we missed during our hiatus, all the important stuff, and we'll be gearing up for Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover, and of course, the Crisis on Infinite Earths graphic novel. All those episodes will be coming up soon. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Ready to move out.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store. which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.